G'day, this is Jeff Phillips coming at you from Darwin and the territory of top end of Australia. It's Friday afternoon, the 28th of August. This show is kind of a follow-up to last week's show. Obviously, it's a week later. Last week's show was On the Brink number 333, The Karma of COVID and Other Unnatural Disasters. This show's in the sense of it being a follow-up, I'm kind of focusing on a concept I made up a few months ago called helioterrorism. It's the step beyond geoterrorism, whereby my species, Homo sapiens, or man the wise, is basically waging war on Mother Earth and all of her children, all of our family of life, and including ourselves. And that's where the karma of COVID comes in. It's like, you know, like Chief Seattle said, what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. And so that's true, metaphorically and literally. So when you look around at all the stuff that's happening, almost all the bad stuff in the world is being done by humans. And another level to the whole karma thing is that a lot of the stuff that's being done by humans, that's being foisted on other humans, is actually in disguise, as it were. It's being foisted as, in the example of COVID, as biomedical remediation. In the name of climate change, it's geoengineering to modify the weather or climate to compensate for all the noxious carbon dioxide emissions we continue to emit, and that kind of thing. And so many people believe all this stuff. And so that's a form of the really negative karma in itself, is for people to be walking around perfectly happy believing in the biggest lies ever foisted on humanity. So what I'm looking at in today's show, first of all, I'll just give a few comments about my being here in Darwin. It's been, about 2.5 weeks that I've been here. Not less, 2 weeks and 2 days. And it's a very different environment from Tasmania. In many ways, I've got a really good situation. I've got a nice place to stay. It's my own house right now, because my friend is back in Queensland having returned to deal with the health of one of his dogs. And that's really where he lives anyway. So pretty much got the house to myself, and I've been doing a lot of watering all the shrubbery and the lawn and the plants and nurturing my go-to collas. And we sort of gave up on the swimming pool. Nobody ever uses it anyway, so I just go in my big swimming pool called Mother Ocean. I'm sitting out all about 200 meters from her right now. The weather is a lot warmer here than it was in Tasmania. For the last month I was there, I saw ice with zero or sub-zero temperatures almost every morning for the last month I was there. Whereas here, it's been getting up to about, like right now, it's quite pleasant. It's probably about 27 degrees centigrade right now, and maybe about 18 in the mornings, maybe about 32 at the hottest part of the day. I think they said it was 35 yesterday. Now, yesterday they were observing that due to the combination of heat and winds, that it was a once in every 5 years catastrophic fire warning situation. And so I think there was a couple of small fires, but nothing major. But this is still, I mean, it's not even September yet. Last year, I think the earliest fire started in Queensland that were pretty big, I think back in August sometime. but it was really in September and October when they really got going down in the Blue Mountains. And so we've got all that. I have to compliment Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia, for at least on the surface, the appearance is that he's been behind, or some kind of faction or coalition that he's associated with, a movement or to create some new legislation that empowers the federal government to disband or make illegal or undo agreements that states of Australia might have undertaken or undergone with foreign governments. Specifically, they're talking about Victoria signing on to the One Belt, One Road initiative of China. And it's pretty clear that the whole lockdown coronavirus scenario in Victoria has a lot to do with that. So anyway, if it's really what it's supposed to be, it's a good idea. But like I observed on Facebook today, if you're going to look at foreign governments in Australia, you need to look not only at the influence of the USA, of the UK, of Israel, and China, but also the influence of the Australian government in Australia, which until 180 or 150 years ago was lived in only by maybe 1,000 different language groups of Indigenous Australians, many of whom are still here. And the government of Australia would totally be a foreign government to them. That's just, it's not even seeking to do covert influence. It actually came in and just took over and set up shop, declaring that there was no one here, terra nullius, bringing down their most evil criminals from England, and all that stuff. The fires in California are raging. I'm not sure if it's continuing to spread and get worse, but it looks like it was just as bad as last year. Maybe it seems to be like doing more damage in national park areas that aren't quite so populated, but I'm just fearing for when it's going to hit here and where it's going to be and what it's going to be like what it was like last December. I'd like to congratulate Dr. Claudia von Werloff for 10 years of her Planetary Society for Mother Earth and her work carrying on the torch and the legacy of Dr. Rosalie Bertel. And she's doing some fantastic work with geoterrorism and the influence of the patriarchal system that's been behind civilization for the past few thousand years. Not that women would do it any differently or could, but it's, you know, she's doing a lot of very important work. And I'd also like to share that I have been trying to get in touch with an Aboriginal actor named David Gulplow. And you'd know him. He's the quintessential Aboriginal actor. He's been in many dozens of films, but he always plays the tracker or the Aboriginal guy, the young guy, like in Rabbit Proof Fence, and The Tracker, and Storm Boy, which I have yet to see, and The Last Wave, which is my very favorite film. He co-starred with Richard Chamberlain. His very first film called Walkabout. These are all legendary Australian films, and I love his work and him so much that I made a really nice painted rock for him a couple of years ago on a flat rock from Second Valley down south of Adelaide, and I've been trying to figure out a way to get it to him. And I know that he spends a lot of time in Arnhem Land in a place called Manangarita. And then I was up at the shopping mall just a few days ago, and I came out to get on my bicycle, and I saw a group of black fellas standing there, and one of them had a t-shirt on. It had the cover of Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd. So I went up and just told him I liked his t-shirt, and he complimented me on mine, which was Harold Thomas's Aboriginal flag. And so we just started talking, and I went like, you know, I bet these guys might know if David Gulpel's ever around, because they're hanging out on the street, you know, and there's kind of like an Indigenous grapevine thing going on. And I asked if they ever knew if he might be around, and the guy that had the Pink Floyd shirt, he goes like, he's my brother. And I'm like, you mean spiritually, or, you know, your actual biological brother? He goes like, no, he's really my brother. And he said that David's, he said he's living in a place called Remingering, which is a little town over at Arnhem Land, and that he was quite ill, which I knew. But then I looked up and saw an article that said he's actually been battling lung cancer for the past couple of years. And so I actually called up the medical clinic in Remingering, and the nice nurse said that he was actually down in Adelaide for medical treatment, but that his family, she knew their family, his family, his sisters and his brother, Jamie, the other brother. So I'm going to send a set of painted rocks for all of them and include David, so they can send him his rock. And if, when I make it down to Adelaide sometime in the next few weeks, if I can figure out where he's at, maybe I'll go and pay him a visit in person. And that would be really, really cool to meet the most legendary Aboriginal actor. And that's really, really cool. Darwin is a very different environment from Tasmania. And it's not just the climate. I mean, the climate and the weather might have something to do with it, but it's kind of like a... it's kind of a lower frequency, more degenerate environment socially. Like, I've got some really nice friends here and some really lovely people and stuff, but just the people, some of the people I run into in public are just vile. And it makes me think of this thing called the Darwin Awards that was founded, well, I don't know how long ago it was founded, but it's based on people get the Darwin Award for killing themselves in the most stupid ways. And so I can't give you any examples, but it's just, it's like stuff that rednecks do. Hey, y'all, watch this. That's what a redneck says before he dies. And so it honors that kind of thing. But just going out and about pretty much every day, I see or experience stuff that makes me think of the Darwin Awards. And I go, like, you know, the whole town of Darwin should just kind of have a Darwin Award. And it ties in with all kind of things about the people's belief in Darwinian evolution and how true that may or may not be. All this different stuff, but a couple of bizarre things have happened to me. Like, in one of my first visits to a beach last week, I stood there and watched. Of course, it's a beach where, of course, dogs are legally allowed, but on the condition that they're under the control of the of its owner. And within certain areas of walkways and playgrounds and barbecues, they have to be on a lead. So, but you know, nobody ever obeys any of these regulations. But anyway, if when I'm on a beach and there's people with dogs, I'm always kind of watching out, looking around me and making sure that nobody's dog is going to run up and try to piss on my gear or come and start hassling me. And I stood there and watched this dog. This guy was standing there talking to somebody else, and his dog ran over about 40 meters from him, and it hunched up and squatted and took a big old shit. And the dude, it just left it sitting there. He didn't go pick it up like he's supposed to. Then I was kind of going in the water having my little swim, but looking back to watch my gear, and then sure enough, that same dog came over and started looking like it was going to sniff on my gear and stuff, so I ran out of the water and yelled at it to get away. And then later on, that dude came walking by, and I didn't walk over to him, but he kind of started walking towards me, so I walked over and I started reprimanding him for dereliction of responsibility. You know, like I said, dude, I stood there and watched your dog take a big shit and you didn't pick it up, and then it ran over here and started acting like it was messing with my gear. And he goes, like, oh, what would it do? And I go, oh, piss on my gear? What do you reckon? And then he tried to justify it all by saying, but this is the territory. This is Darwin. As if that kind of stupid fucking behavior was okay here. So that's an example of the mentality of here. There's a lot of people like that. But an even more bizarre situation was, I was riding my bicycle down the street, well, actually down the sidewalk, which in that stretch of the road, the sidewalk and the bike path are the same. Going down the road, only about two or three blocks from where I'm right now at Dripstone Beach, and there was this bloke, whippersnippering with his weed eater, sort of some shrubberies there, and didn't really think anything about it. So I'm going past, and all of a sudden a piece of stuff flies up and hits me in the cheek, like a small rock or a piece of bark or something. That it kind of hurt, and if it had hit me in the eye, it could have done some damage. And so I glanced over and saw the dude standing there, and his whippersnipper didn't have any protection at all. There was no guard on it down around where the hub is. It was just the little disc of the spinning cables, and that was it, twirling around. So I went about 20 meters, and I turned around and went back and decided to have a diplomatic word with that bloke, and I got his attention, and I told him what happened. And instead of apologizing, or he didn't even turn the thing off, he looked at me really weird. He goes, like, "This is my home." And then he started coming at me with the twirling weed eater, like aiming it at my leg. And I was standing on the sidewalk. I wasn't even on his property. I was on public property. So for a split second, anyway, I instantly grabbed the rod of this whippersnipper and held it really tight, and I stopped it from going onto my leg. And I stood there for a second, and I came really close to just grabbing the whole thing and jerking it out of his hand and slamming it down on the ground and probably stomping on it and bending it and breaking it and then probably even bashing him. But I went like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I kind of jerked it back and shoved it back in his face, and I told him I was going to file a complaint with the police. And then I took some photos of him standing there with the thing in his hand in his house that shows the address and everything. And so I never did call the police, because I go like, well, you know, what's actually going to happen? Is he just going to, would he deny what happened? But I thought I might ring the police and just, without giving them any specific details, tell them what happened and ask what their opinion would be. Because what if it put my eye out? Or what if I was a little kid and it put my eye out? Or what if I was black? What if I was a little black kid and my eye was damaged by that? I mean, this dude was just a fucking asshole jerk. And he was like and sort of an elderly European guy, sounded like he might be Dutch. And in a fairly wealthy, this would have been probably at least a $2 or $3 million house based on the size of this house and the neighborhood that it's in. So anyway, what this dude's trip was, I have no idea. This is all just typical. This is the typical Darwin. And there's plenty of airplanes flying around. The house where I'm staying is not too far from the airport. So most of the time, the noise level is not too bad. But starting at about 7 o'clock every morning, all these single-engine planes start taking off and whirring around. And it's like the same ones just kind of go around and around and around for about an hour. Quite loud. I don't know what they're doing, if they're giving lessons or something like that. Anyway, but this is all sort of low-grade warfare being conducted by people against people. Speaking of the influence of foreign governments, Australia's primary intelligence agency is called ASIO, Australian Strategic Intelligence Office, or something like that. But anyway, the guy that had been head of it for 5 years resigned suddenly 2 years ago, with a very strong warning about the influence of China in Australia, about how they're trying to subvert all the governments and the people and place themselves in positions of power and basically take over the whole place. And I go like, well, look, you know, it's nothing that England and the USA haven't been already doing for a long time, but it's pretty blatant. And, you know, it's like there are differences between the US, England, and China, although the boundaries are becoming more and more blurred. So anyway, I am now in the town that sold a 99-year lease on its port to China. And this was a huge strategic era, and a lot of people are trying to actually undo it. And this new legislation behind, that the Morrison administration is behind, may be able to undo that too. So this is all just the morass of bullshit people are inflicting on each other. But there's a bloke I've met here. I'm not going to go into who he is or what he does or anything like that, but one of the things he's involved in is he's a consultant and a partner in a new firm that is trying to build a hydrogen fuel facility here in Darwin for exporting it to Asia. And so who would he possibly be working with or for to do that? And I'm going like, and this is a dude that believes in the mainstream climate change scenario. And I was emailing him today and I go like, dude, so hydrogen, of course it sounds good on paper, but the reason it hasn't been developed as a fuel is because it's extraordinarily explosive. It's hard to contain. That's why BMW had hydrogen-powered prototype cars in the early 80s, but the fuel was the problem. They had to intersperse the hydrogen with helium so that it couldn't explode. I mean, that's like the main thing. And you can talk about fuel cells and all that different kind of stuff like they use in rockets. So theoretically, it sounds good. It goes like, oh, hydrogen. When you burn it, it turns into water. But, you know, what we're burning in vehicles and vessels and stuff isn't even the main problem. It's the fact that they exist and what we're doing with it. You know, regardless of whether a four-wheel drive vehicle or a giant destroyer-class vessel, regardless of whether it's running on diesel or biodiesel or electric or nuclear or hydrogen, regardless of the side effects and ecological and environmental toxicity and negative impacts from the fuel, the fact remains that it's still giant chunks of metal hurtling through the ocean and generating noise and displacing water and colliding with animals, or a vehicle hurtling down the highway creating massive roadkill. Speaking of hydrocarbons, there goes a motorcycle. So, very interesting that building a hydrogen fuel facility in Darwin could possibly end up being what qualifies the city for a posthumous Darwin Award. Oh, I'll have to write about that. So anyway, what I'll talk about the rest of the show is the helioterrorism aspect of stuff that Homo sapiens is trying to foist off the surface of the Earth. Like, now we've got all the satellites going up by Elon Musk, part of the Starlink network of what's supposed to be several, maybe 10 or 20,000 satellites, and I think maybe quite a few dozen, if not hundreds, are up already. But they're already talking about how these are already creating artificial constellations of technological debris in the sky. And that's something I need to take up with Fred Watson, the astronomer, in our next interview. So we've got that. And we've got the whole issue of what I call Operation Frankenseed, where Duncan Steele, the space scientist I interviewed a few months ago in New Zealand, wants to disseminate genetically modified organisms on Mars. And he's writing a book about it, and the dude is a kook, but a very well-respected and influential kook with Australian security clearances, connections with Lockheed Martin, with Rocket Lab, with Oak Ridge National Laboratory, the company he works for on the South Island of New Zealand, specializes in analyzing satellite data. But one of his fellow researchers is from Oak Ridge National Laboratory, which was not only a hub of the Manhattan Project, but in the world of today, it has one of the biggest supercomputer networks in the planet, and it's known for its work with CRISPR gene editing technology and the creation of genetically modified organisms. So what they would send up there is a whole story in itself, and why, and this is in direct violation of every planetary protection protocol that serious scientists like astronomer Carl Sagan always warned and specified about. They even challenged, even back in the late 50s, they challenged the official body that was creating sterilization regulations for saying that they weren't strict enough. So We've got all these probes going into space, all these satellites. We've got things landing on Mars and comets and asteroids and invading these fellow beings. But we've also got things bringing stuff back. And so what kind of sense does that make? You know, this is just, it's sort of like the early phase of asteroid or comet or moons of other planets mining, bringing back small amounts to see what it is. I hope it doesn't have any something that spreads outside the isolation facility. But it's a whole world of literally helioterrorism that's unfolding due to our infliction of our intelligence on the rest of the solar system. Like I've said before, I think that this kind of thing may be the straw that finally breaks the camel's back, as it were, in terms of Mother Earth's tolerance of our species. It's very interesting to think that, I guess you could call it the radius of contact, because in the movie Contact, based on the novel by Carl Sagan and the film starring Jodie Foster, where they discover a radio signal coming from Vega, and it contains the instructions on how to build a device. When they build it, and then she goes through it, and she's transported into this other dimension where she encounters the alien beings who take on the form of her dad, who's dead. And they just let her know that the main thing was that they showed that they exist. So contact was initiated. But in that movie, it showed that the Vegans, what they sent back to us as part of their initial message, was the first thing that they received from us was the 1936 Berlin Olympic Games, which was the first internationally broadcast televised signal, the most powerful audiovisual signal that had yet ever been emanated on the planet. And so in 1936, it left out from Earth, going in all in 360 degrees or more, a spherical emanation. And so they received it. And so at the date of the contact would have been two times the distance of Vega to the sun in light years, assuming that they replied more or less instantaneously. So the radius of contact now would be that wavefront of the Berlin Olympic Games would now be about 84 and a half light years out, going in every direction. So we could create a map that would show how many bright stars and other objects are within a spherical radius of 84 and a half light years, and see who might have detected us by then. And then we could also have smaller radii that would be the radius of the pilot episode of Gilligan's Island or the Beverly Hillbillies or I Dream of Jeannie. You know, we could define spherical regions of our local universe in terms of the boundary at which what they would have received from us by then. Very interesting. Could be a cool computer generated thing. But anyway, the sun's getting low. I'm going to go out and have my little careful dip on the edge of the ocean, making sure there's no box jellyfish there or crocodiles. And I don't think there's going to be anything like that for a few more weeks. It's not even September yet. They did say someone got stung by a jellyfish at Nightcliff a week or two ago, but that was kind of a fluke. I'm very careful. And I continue to watch this really cool TV show called The Saint with Roger Moore. And last night, he was introduced as the fatally magnetic The Saint, Simon Templar. So, I won't say that I'm fatally magnetic, but definitely magnetic. But anyway, this is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off for On the Brink Radio. If I sound a little slow, it's because I'm kind of in the slower regional vortex of Darwin now. I've dropped down in frequency. Plus, it's a bit warm. But I'm getting a lot done. There's a lot of... My body's... I don't have to spend 10 minutes putting on cold weather gear. So it's quite nice. And it's not windy. And there's heaps of these beautiful birds called Brahminy kites flying over. There's a couple right now. Not like I saw last week. But beautiful casuarina trees. There's been a few fires, but none were too close to us here. But I'm just praying that this season is not going to be like last year, and this is going to be on top of all the COVID-19 bullshit, which is another whole unnatural disaster in itself. Anyway, many thanks to Jill Stanley, UCY-TV, all my friends and family everywhere. Keep it in the road. Live simply so that others may simply live. And may the force of life and love be with you always. Good day.
real world is magical. The real world is miraculous. We are the ancestors. We are the sun of all that has ever been. When we acknowledge that, we step into the real world. An age of the mind enshrined, an age where science will unravel the very strands of mind, where science pushes out into the mystery of the stars, ascends at the greatest crossroads reached by human